First item on the agenda is a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2341. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2341.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2341 is a committee bill. When a person is arrested outside of Oregon for a criminal proceeding occurring within the state must determine whether to extradite the person. Currently, Oregon law permits the court to order extradition costs at the time a person is convicted of a crime. It does not, however, permit the court to order extradition costs when a person is adjudicated for a probation violation. House Bill 2341 amends Oregon law and explicitly authorizes the court to order extradition costs for defendants found in violation of their probation. The Dash 1 amendment clarifies the account for which the funds would be placed. There's no revenue impact and indeterminate fiscal impact on the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you. Ms. Meyer, please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I had a moment exchange with the chair, and I said, you know, if you call a bill and no one comes up forward to testify, does that mean the bill's dead? But I didn't get that assurance, and so therefore I wrote my name down. So Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, we do have a concern about this, and what I'd like to say simply is the issue of fees, the accumulation of issues in fees and fines in the context of a criminal case is starting to get to be cumulatively a really big deal. And more what we're finding is it's very tempting for some state agencies to impose a fee or a fine really that simply recoups the costs of that government agency doing its work. And we see this generally of that nature. We do understand here that the language is permissive, and we appreciate that. It simply says the court may impose the fine. If it were to say shall, that would be concerning. The costs of returning someone on extradition is generally in the thousands of dollars, so this would be a big hit. And we think we would have no problem with the bill if it were limited to the defendant violating probation by leaving the state without permission of the court. Then we think that the imposing the cost of extradition in that instance could be justified. So the takeaway point we'd like to make is this. We have been watching this fees and fine issue for a bit, and we struggled with introducing a bill, and one's being introduced over on the Senate side that addresses it in just a minor little segment, niche issue. We would like to ask that during the interim between 2015 and 17, that there actually be a task force that does look at all of these fees and fines that start to accumulate, because they do run up. They become judgments in favor of the state. They then are subject to collections, and it just it adds up. So what our concern was with this bill is that it's authorizing basically the recoupment of costs in doing business as opposed to paying a third-party vendor for a service of some sort. And were this bill limited to instances when the defendant leaves the jurisdiction of Oregon in violation of conditions of probation, we think that would be much more narrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2341. And move on to the next bill. Okay. You need to go right away, or can you wait?
Me.
Okay.
She's
okay. Okay. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2336.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, we had a public hearing on this bill on February 4th. At that time, we didn't have the appropriate fiscals. Currently, ORS 19.260 permits notices of appeal to be filed and served by mail. Filing can be accomplished by registered or certified mail. House Bill 2336 with the Dash 2 amendment authorizes filing and service to be accomplished by commercial delivery services such as UPS or FedEx, as well as other U.S. Postal Service delivery services. So long as the delivery is calculated to occur within 3 days, there is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, and the Dash 2 amendments are ready to move.
Okay.
You ready?
Oh, we are.
Work session. Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into, see, it's House Bill 2336.
Representative Olson moves dash two amendments into House Bill 2336. Is there any discussion?
I'll put it in the consent calendar.
Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. We could put that on the consent calendar. I haven't seen one on there yet from us.
So we're going to move the bill then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2336 as amended to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2336 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Again, any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, and we'll put that one on the consent calendar.
Thank you.
Open a work session on House Bill 2644.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2644, you heard back on February 16th. This allows a claim for wrongful death against the state in a very narrow set of circumstances. The claim is only allowable against the state and not against local government, local public bodies. The death must have occurred in the scope and course of the person's employment, and it must have occurred as a result of the conduct of another person who is subsequently convicted of murder or found guilty except for insanity of murder, and the person was not employed by a public body at the time of death. The measure would only apply to claims based on crimes committed on or after May 1st, 2012, and is repealed on January 2nd, 2017. We have received the paperwork on this measure. There is no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact.
Okay, it's ready to go.
Correct.
Okay, is there any discussion on this bill?
Does this bill literally apply to three cases or something?
Very narrow. Chair Barker, Representative Greenlee, the fiscal impact estimates that it could apply to, I believe I read just a handful of persons. Very limited impact.
I'm not sure why we're doing a bill for those cases only. So it seems to me it's either good policy or it's not good policy. If it's not good policy, it's not good for those cases. If it is good policy, which I'm not sure it is, then it ought to have much broader applications.
Okay. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo Representative Greenlee's comments and say, now I support this bill and I'm happy to move it forward. This family has been through a lot. This bill has been through a lot, and I just personally can't. I couldn't stand to be an additional barrier to this family. They've earned this. However, having said that, there is a larger issue that this bill presents, and I think we should keep moving forward on that without necessarily delaying this bill. And I'm happy to work with Representative Greenlee or anyone else on that.
Yeah. We heard the testimony last session
a few times, right?
And we all, I think, in the committee understood that this shouldn't be allowed to happen. Now we have an opportunity to correct it, and some justice sometimes delayed, but I'm very much in support of it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We obviously haven't heard the whole facts of this other case. We've heard something. But the wrongful death suit in this case is supposed to go against PSRB for making a decision on placing somebody rather than, I'm not sure who the wrongful death suit go. It struck me that the agency in sending out the person was probably at fault, but it's hard to see that PSRB was at fault because they made the decision to put this person out. So, I mean, I'm not even convinced on the substance of the bill. But
we'll
do
you
need my vote to move it?
No, we don't.
No. Okay. I'll be a courtesy no. I might change my mind.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Yes, Representative Leininger.
I agree with what Representative Barton just said, and I think that the idea that we have a sunset on this doesn't make sense, because I actually think that the accountability contained within the policy does make sense. And so, Representative Barton, I'd be pleased to work with you on dealing with this going forward, but I think it's the right thing for now for us to move this. I haven't been on this committee long, but this bill has been discussed at almost every work session that we've had since I've been on this committee for the last year and a half.
Right. It's we've had it through two different sessions trying to get it tailored. Okay. Motion.
Yep. So, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2644 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2644 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenlick?
No.
Representative Leiniger?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
Excused.
Representative Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Excused.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. I have Representative Witt carrier. Thank you. Okay. Next item on the agenda is a public hearing, and it says public hearing and possible work sessions on House Bill 2392, 2393, and 2394. We don't plan to work those today, but we will have the public hearing. So I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill. Would you like me to open all three at once?
Yep, that would be a good idea.
We'll have a public hearing, open a hearing on House Bill 2392, House Bill 2393, House Bill 2394. Representative Olson, Representative Whitson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany office. I want to say Albany office. How about the Albany area? There we go. Wow. That's been a few years ago.
As you get older, you'll do that more often.
Yeah.
So
wow.
It happens.
So I have seated to my left Representative Gail Whitsitt from Klamath Falls area, not office, and also Lieutenant Steve Burr from Salem Police Department as well. But I need to kind of give you a little bit of history about how we got to where we're at today with these three bills dealing with the public assistance programs, and especially the idea was to try to kind of deal with the fraud as well as the abuse that was happening within SNAP, and also TANF, of Temporary Assistance to Needy Families programs, basically your public assistance programs. 2 years ago in the Human Services Committee, there were eight bills that were proposed to our committee, and there were a variety of things, but they were all trying to get at of trying to gain some control of what was happening with the Oregon Trail Card for the use, for the abuse as well as for the fraud. As a result of that, the chair at that time, Carolyn Tomei, and I, we ended up putting together a work group. Lieutenant Burr was one of the members that participated in that. Jill Gray was another one from Department of Human Services, and several others. But we met a number of times, and as a result, we came up with a nice little study of what we wanted. And also in the process, we came up with some recommendations, what we really felt that we should do dealing with some of the concerns that were addressed. Well, the three things that are in front of you today, the three House bills, happen to reflect some of those recommendations that we wanted. The first recommendation that we'll address is actually this first House bill, which is House Bill 2392. It's a very simple solution to help address the issue for fraud and abuse dealing with the Oregon Trail Card. And I see John Carter also is in the back room with me, too. He's with the Fraud Investigative Unit with Department of Human Services as well. But what we had learned, and especially from Lieutenant Burr sharing different issues, is that we needed to have a little bit better control of what was happening. And one of the things that we realized that if by placing the name on the card, a couple things occur. One is that you would help break down the barrier of communication between law enforcement and the fraud unit itself. And that's critical for this to really work well. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Because currently, the way the laws are structured here in Oregon right now, they reflect that of what the federal government requires. So if, let's say, for example, Representative Krieger and Representative Barker, you out investigate a burglary tonight, and in the process of that burglary, you stumble onto a shoebox full of Oregon Trail cards in the back bedroom. All it has on it is 16-digit PIN number. You have no idea who those cards belong to, but you'd like to kind of know who they belong to. So you'd go to the fraud investigative unit and ask for that. But in order for you to identify and find out who those cards belong to, you have to have two things, a court order, and you also need to have the name of who the card holder is. That's a restriction, and it creates a barrier between the fraud unit and law enforcement. There's no restrictions for us by placing a name from what the federal government permits on cards like this. So by moving forward with this and placing names on the card, you'd break down a barrier in the process. That's one area. The other thing, too, that we believe, too, as we were having discussion in our work group, is that we really do believe that this would also help out with accountability as well for folks using the trail cards. So I'm going to stop right there. I can go into detail more about what the Secretary of State's audit was that revealed a number of issues with the SNAP program. But what I find interesting and satisfying is to know that Department of Human Services and this program are very interested in program integrity. And that's why they've been at the table. That's why they've been there. And I realize that they're neutral with this right now, this bill, but they've been there at the whole time helping us craft to go this direction. So I'll stop right there.
Chair Barker, committee members, I'm Representative Gail Whitsitt, and I represent House District 56, which is the southern half of Klamath and Lake counties to the California state line. I would like to address House Bill 2392 as a co-sponsor of the bill. My comments are specifically related to the placing of names on the Oregon Trail card for identification purposes. And I'll give you a little background, my interest in particular. In 2013, Operation Trojan Horse was undertaken in Klamath County by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Oregon Attorney General, and the DEA. It was a major Mexican drug cartel bust of a small Mexican carniceria in Klamath Falls that was accepting EBT food cards in exchange for acquiring illegal drugs, including heroin, methamphetamine, and marijuana. The seizure also included more than 50 guns. The undercover operation went on for nearly 2 years to accumulate the evidence needed to bust over 40 drug dealers. And it was difficult, if not impossible, to determine who the individuals were that were trading taxpayer-funded EBT cards for drugs. That's essentially what they were doing. They had a little storefront of a Mexican meat market, and they would go in and take their Oregon Trail cards and come out with drugs. I drafted a bill to put photos on the cards, but was told by the banking industry, which produces the cards for the state of Oregon, that it was too expensive to undertake to have photos on them. Some background on the cards, as reported by the Secretary of State's Audit Division, there are over 800,000 Oregonians served by the SNAP program. Of these, the Secretary of State's auditors found 37,300 clients have requested five or more replacement cards in the last 3 years. Results also showed that some people have received up to 30 cards in the same time frame. DHS investigated over 4,000 cases of suspected fraud last year. About 1,000 cases resulted in some form of sanction, but the DHS does not track the type of fraud involved. In the random audit report from the Secretary of State's office, about 1,200 matches had known or possible inappropriate payment representing several million dollars in benefits over a two-year period. This does include SNAP, TANF, and Medicaid combined. While it is impossible to extrapolate the number of fraud cases from this number, I would suggest to the committee we have reason to conclude that abuse of the
system is a very serious problem. I believe it would be in the best interest of the state to require identification on these EBT cards to help remove those individuals who are chronic abusers of the system. They do not deserve taxpayer monies if they are using the cards to purchase drugs, alcohol, or tobacco, and tobacco, instead of food. A lot of them also have small children that are not receiving the benefits that they should be receiving because the individuals with the cards are spending it on those things. So, thank you.
I have a question that I don't know, Representative, if you would know the answer. So if I report my card lost or stolen, and then this DHS then by that number say, okay, that card was later used somewhere else, or they just write it off?
I don't know the okay. answer to that. They can probably tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah, Bleet Burke is here. And I mean, she'll come up here shortly, and she can actually respond to that question.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Lieutenant Steve Burr. I'm employed by the City of Salem as a police officer. Although I'm here not representing the City of Salem, as they do not have an official position on this bill, I'm here as a guest of Representative Olson. For over 6 years, I supervised the criminal investigation section of the City of Salem. 3 years ago, we conducted an investigation into a produce market on Selwyn Road after there were allegations that they were purchasing EBT benefits for 50 cents on the dollar. We conducted surveillance of the business in conjunction with the Inspector General's Office of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And on our final day, while watching real-time transactions, we arrested 5 people in 3 hours for selling EBT benefits. In addition, we arrested the owner of the produce stand for racketeering, and then we subsequently made 4 additional arrests in conjunction with that investigation. We frequently saw a pattern of the cards being sold to the proprietor of the business, and then we could watch them being moved to various businesses like Costco, Food for Less, where he purchased items for his produce stand as well as a food cart that he operated out in front of the business. The problem with having no names on the card is there's absolutely no accountability for the use of the card. If this individual who was a male were trying to pass a card that was Mary Smith, it would probably raise some eyebrows that he may not be a provider for her. So we certainly do support this measure.
Okay. Any questions? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly love the idea. My question is, I've noticed people in front of me at the check stand using their card, and they just slide it through the machine and they go on. Do we have any data that would tell us, give us any information about the effectiveness of this? Because my concern is we'll put a name on there, and in many instances they'll slide their card and they won't. That won't be the moment of catching somebody. It will be after the fact. Is that what this is driving at?
It's going to be more, Mr. Chair and Representative Springer, it's going to be more focused toward preventing the 50 cents on a dollar type issue. John Carter is here, too, from the fraud unit, and he can probably even go into more detail with where this would go. But you got to understand that the trail card has a couple programs attached to it. You have the SNAP program that you can only use for, you know, items that are identified through the system with nutritional value. And then the other part is the TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, where it actually is kind of like a debit card that you can get cash out of. So there's, and that in itself is another problem.
Yeah.
But and that's a tough one to have, but the names on the card's going to help. Now, I also want to shift gears on the other two bills, too, while we're at this, so it kind of pulls in, again, what the work group was after. What we realized, too, that we needed to do was with House Bill 2393 was to, and then we have an amendment to deal with that, is to start paying back the Department of Human Services through the program when an overrider, which is a position within DHS, determines that benefits and payments have been over what was entitled to that individual. So if somebody then wins big on the lottery, that would be applied toward the sum of that payment. 2394 also is part of the lottery system, and what that does is it actually, let's see, creates that there would be a communication connection between the lottery division and Department of Human Services whenever there is a payout, and then the amendment reflects that for this bill as well of $1,250.
Chair Barker, Representative Springer, members of the committee, if I could also address your question. Whenever we arrest somebody and we take them into custody, we always go through the contents of their wallets and stuff. Just as anybody else that would have a debit card or a credit card in somebody else's name, having possession of a SNAP card in somebody else's name would be the beginning of a talking point about why that individual was in possession of that card.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to follow up and say, and if you find a box of these during a major bust, you know probably who sold them for drugs in the case. And we have a very large cartel presence in Klamath County because we are at the juncture of the highway going east into Idaho and north into Washington. And so it is a huge problem in areas along these highways that the cartels have infiltrated, and so that's why my interest in particular is to identify who's participating by buying drugs, you know, from the cartel, basically.
Thank you very much, Representative. Appreciate
it. I'm sorry. Have it, just a little discussion about 93 and 94.
Yeah, we're covering all three of them.
Yeah, or somebody else.
I'm sorry, there's Mr. Roberts from the lotteries here and then a couple of people.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And then I have Mr. Roberts from the Oregon Lottery, and then Representative Olson, who did you want to call up from the other group? Come on up.
Sure, I'll just stay here then.
Okay. But you were going to have somebody else come up to from DHS. Yeah.
Your job.
It'd be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jack Roberts, the director of the Oregon Lottery, and our position on these bills is neutral, as it is on all bills until we hear otherwise from the governor. But there's some things I wanted to make sure and clarify. There is a fiscal impact that we've reported, and the reason we did that is because we have received advice from the Department of Justice before, and it really dates back to 1992 when we had the first time we were using this for child support. And we were told that collecting debts to the state or monies for the state is not a constitutionally permissible use for lottery funds, and so we have to be reimbursed. That's really, we're just covering ourselves on that. We certainly are capable of swallowing this. And so if someone can get creative, and I remember the days when we defined prison construction as economic development, if we can find a way to fit that, we'll do that. But that's, and so we were trying to be conservative about this. We don't have a lot of experience. It goes back to, say, to 92. But that's why we put the numbers in there that we did. The other issue that we are concerned about, just because we haven't really had a chance to research entirely, but in the past, the advice that we've had is that federal law restricts us about when we can use people's Social Security numbers. And it's our understanding that federal law authorizes it for child support enforcement, which, of course, is what we do now, tax collection, and driver and vehicle licensing. And under the Federal Privacy Act, we can't require the release of that. We can have people voluntarily release it otherwise. If that's changed, I know there's been federal legislation. If that has, we're more than happy to do it. But certainly if this passes, we'll have to run this by DOJ and make sure that we can do that. One thing I want to thank you for is in the Dash 1 amendments to 93, telling us which priority which to pay if we have that, because that was one of the concerns we have. If it exceeds the amount that's being garnished with the amount of the winnings, and this makes it clear that it goes to the passing child support. So that makes it a lot easier for us to know that, and that's very helpful. And then finally, the other thing I would say that we think there is an important role for us to play in helping to collect this. I would urge you going forward to do that with some caution. There are problems in other states where they have become very aggressive about using that to collect everything and anything, and it has created a cottage industry of people. In Florida, they're called 10 percenters. These are people who have a clean record, can get the payment in full, and so they basically make agreements with people to collect the payment for 10%. They know that happens because they're either have extremely lucky people who win all the time, or they're working through that. And that starts to undermine the system. So we do think that in appropriate cases, and we certainly think this is one, it makes sense to use this as one vehicle. But again, for that reason also, just because if we make it too cumbersome for people to collect their winnings, it discourages people from playing. They don't have that at the Indian casinos. They don't have that at the poker clubs in Portland, and they don't have that at the at Portland Meadows. So we'd like to be judicious in how that's used, and would expect that you would do that.
I don't know offhand. So if I win $500, I don't have to come to Salem, but if I win, how much?
And this gets a little complicated. Basically, it's $600, because if you're over 600, because under Oregon law, you don't have to even pay taxes on winnings less than 600. Federal law is different. Federal law says you're supposed to pay tax on all your winnings, but you only have to have the withholding at 1,200. We withhold over 600, and so there you can't just, if you're playing poker in a local establishment, or if you win a ticket that's a small amount, you can cash that in at the retailer, but if it's more than that, you have to come here or do it by mail. And so that's why we have the ability to do that. And with video poker, it's a little different. It's actually 1,200 because the federal laws comply, although there is some talk now that they're going to lower theirs to 600 as well. But those are the dollars. I mean, the really big winnings, they always have to come to us. So if the idea is to try to, someone who gets a big Powerball ticket, we have the ability to do the garnishment, and it works quite well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr.
Springer.
Chair. I don't play the lottery, so I have zero experience here. I'm thinking of some of the smaller stores in my area. They would pay out on a $600 ticket? How's that work? How do they get the payout? I don't think I understood that right.
They have the ability to. They're not required to. And most of them like to, because if they pay somebody that, they hope that they'll spend some money in their establishment before they leave. But they can pay up to $600, or they can take it. They give them the ticket, and they can take it someplace else. They can validate it. But they can't pay if it's over $600.
Follow up. Is that cash they pay?
Generally,
I mean, I would think.
Doesn't have to be. One of the things we don't, obviously on the real large ones, we generally give people a check, although we're now, we think we're on the verge of being able to do a debit card, which helps because there are a lot of people who win the lottery who don't have Mac accounts, and who it's a little cumbersome for them to try to transact that. So we are working on ways to try to do that. But for the local retailers, they basically are paying cash primarily.
Oh. Representative Greenway.
I'd like to understand, perhaps Representative also help me, the difference between the two bills. And one says if you collect over 600, you hold that. And the other one, it says if you win over 1,000, you notify at some later time. Okay. Am I getting confused by this?
No, you're not confused. The 2393 deals with the piece that addresses the issue for the $600. Let's see.
Well, or more than 600, so it's say it may be 1,000.
And let's see.
Let's say in the first case.
Thanks.
You win $1,100, and in the second case, you win $1,100. Are there two different things that happen to you?
There are two different things. One is notification for a certain amount that the communication between the lottery division notify.
The lottery division pays me the money, and within 7 days notifies somebody that I've been paid the money, right? I think that's how I read 94.
notify DHS within a week.
Yeah, after they paid me.
Right.
After they paid me on the basis of 94. They pay me the $1,100 and then they notify DHS that I've been paid. But in 93, they hold the $1,100 that I'm going to be paid until they find out whether I've been overpaid before so they can garnish it at that point.
There's got to be some type of a connection that's going on between Department of Human Services and that of the lottery for when the overriders need to receive that amount of money. And what it is basically anything over $1,250, the lottery division.
It says $1,000, but they're going to.
Will notify DHS of that winnings. So right now, there's a barrier between them for notifying at all.
Well, I understand the notifying, but what I'm trying to understand, if I may, Mr. Chair, is that on the basis of the first one, Jack doesn't pay out the money. I win $1,100, and on the basis of 2393, he holds the payout and checks whether I owe DHS money. But on the basis of the next one, he pays it and then notifies DHS. Does he hold it first?
Can I help you with that? Because
this
is basically 2393 is the way it works now for child support. We have the ability to check immediately on whether they believe that you have delinquent child support. And under this, it would add these other things. If you've received excessive money for public benefits or medical costs, so that triggers it. That then we hold it, so there's still an adjudicative process, so we don't make the decision whether you owe it or not. But it would be in that situation that we would hold the money. For other people who are just winners, this would require us to notify them people who have won that
so
much money.
93, if we pass both of them, 93 comes first. You hold it, you check and see if there's a need to garnish you that for the overpayment. And if there's not, then you pay the $1,100 or whatever that number is to me, and you then notify DHS. So DHS is involved in both cases, how it works. Then what's DHS supposed to do with the fact that I've just gotten $1,100?
Well, you're not going to do the notification until with the new amendment, which identifies at $1,250.
Whatever the number is.
So once they get notified of that, that's when then with the overriders having identified that there's the potential of the benefits being overpaid, that's then when they will pursue the client.
I've spent $1,000 or the $1,200 on wine, women, and song, at least certainly wine and song. But they're going to still try and come after me at that point because they know I've gotten some money. Is that how that works?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I'm sorry, Representative Springer.
No, I was late, so thank you, Mr. Chair. So under 2394, everybody who wins a prize of, with the amendment, $1,250 or more, everybody who wins, their name will be given to DHS, their information will be given to DHS. Is there a process in place that can handle that? I don't know how big of a number that is. Looks to me like a lot of people play the lottery. What would that be workload-wise?
Chair Barker and then Representative Springer, Jack, you've crunched some numbers on that. And my understanding, lottery has the ability to do this. It is going to cost, there will be a fiscal attached to it to make that compatible. To communicate back and forth for that.
Yeah, we have no problem translating, getting information. What DHS does with it is up to them, and whether they're really able to go through and match that up with people, that's from our standpoint, their problem. But we have no problem electronically sending that up forward.
Thanks.
So maybe the question I had about, so if I report my card lost, are stolen, then you issue me another card, and then the first card is used. Is that tracked at all, or you just?
Yes. Chair Barker, my name is John Carter. I am the manager of fraud investigations for the Department of Human Services, and thank you for the invite here. and for an opportunity to comment. The answer to your question, sir, would be once a card is, if a card is reported lost or stolen, or let me back up, if a card is replaced, that deactivates the card that was previously out there. So the card that was lost or stolen or reported lost or stolen cannot be used at that point.
And so if I say I lost my card, it had $500 on it, and you look to replace it and it says $100. I'm just kind of curious. I don't mean to catch off guard. I would ask you these in advance, but
no.
So then it's something done. If I claim to have lost $500 and by the time, so maybe I've spent it down and then thrown it away and made a false claim, or maybe it got stolen and I say, well, I had $500 when I really didn't.
Chair Barker, the answer to that question is benefits are not duplicated. In other words, if a person reports their card lost or stolen, the moment the benefits are issued and placed available to the client on the card, that becomes the responsibility of that client.
Okay.
It would be the same as any person losing a debit card. It's their responsibility to protect their funds.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions?
But if there was still $100 left, then their new card would get that $100, yeah. I assume.
Chair Barker and Representative Greenlick, yes, the answer to that question, any funds that were still on that account at the time that it was reported would still be available when a new card was issued. Yes.
Okay, so just to follow up with that, Mr. Chair and committee members, the Secretary of State's audit revealed that during a three-year time period, there were 37,300 incidents where five cards or more were replaced for clients.
Right, yeah.
And that's pretty sizable. Really appreciate what Department of Human Services has done. They've really worked hard on trying to lower that and have better control with that, and they've been quite successful with that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming down. Thank you for coming over. Anyone else want to testify on these bills? Yeah, okay. Please, come on up.
Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Newell Ching, Public Affairs Director at Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. As you know, hunger results from family economic instability, and during the Great Recession, more and more families facing economic instability turned to the SNAP program to get through hard times. And first of all, I would like to say that we do not oppose in principle. I want to speak to HB 2392 today, and we do not oppose in principle the idea of putting names on SNAP cards. And program integrity is something we take very, very seriously. We're proud that even with these increased caseloads we've seen since the Great Recession, that we have made significant steps to address program integrity. Nationwide, SNAP error rates are at all-time lows. They've fallen for the last seven consecutive years. And as was pointed out in the work group report, of which Partners for Hunger-Free Oregon was a part, along with Vice Chair Olson and others, was that Oregon's fraud rate is less than 0.5% of the total caseload for SNAP and TANF. Another way of saying that is if you were to line up 200 people, 199 of those people are playing by the rules, and one is not playing by the rules. So nevertheless, we need to take every opportunity we can to make SNAP's accuracy and integrity even better. And today, I just want to make sure that while the committee addresses one specific set of problems, which the vice chair spoke very eloquently about, that we do not create others. And so just a few of our concerns that I would like to highlight, call them constructive thoughts, if you will. One is that any new requirements to put names claims on SNAP or EBT cards must not cause delays in issuance. DHS has done some remarkable work to make sure that families who are experiencing economic instability are able to be issued benefits quickly, often the same day in which they apply. So it's very, very important that if insofar as we proceed in getting names on SNAP cards, that we do not cause delays for families who are very much in need. Another thought is that insofar as there's going to be a fiscal impact for this bill, we must be very, very careful that we do not take that money from programs that impact families who may be experiencing hunger. In other words, we must not rob Peter to pay Paul. Another issue in this was brought up by Representative Springer was that since all members of the eligible household, including possibly teenagers or in the case of seniors, sometimes seniors will give the card to a trusted caretaker to go to the grocery store and to give the secret four-digit PIN number to procure food. That is legal. We believe that is appropriate, and we must make sure that that is not interfered with. It's our understanding that the intent of HB 2392 is to address this very, very specific concern that law enforcement have the tools to address trafficking that is happening, but we do not believe it is the intent of the authors to cause additional steps at grocery stores. So that people, for example, I can't remember the last time that I've gone to a grocery store, used a credit card, and been asked for my ID. There is we must apply the same standards for people who are on SNAP as we would for everyone else, and there's some civil rights issues that arise up there as well. But again, it is our understanding that the intent of the authors is just to address this issue for law enforcement. And it is also our understanding that as part of the work group the names of one eligible adult was to be printed on the card, the bill as written specifies that all eligible adults would be printed on the card. That's inconsistent with our understanding, but those are our issues. Thank you for taking the time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much for bringing those points up.
Thank you.
Mr. Martinez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Banks of Oregon. First of all, I want to commend Representative Olson for bringing this bill. We have gone round and round on this issue for a couple of years now. I wanted to just make sure on one thing. I think one of the folks that testified earlier said that the banking community objected to the expense part of the photo. That was just one part of it. More of a bigger part of it was probably 7 or 8 years ago, photos were becoming very prominent on different debit cards and credit cards from different banks. What they found over the past few years is that's not very successful in eliminating fraud. The last person that testified talked about other folks using cards. I've sent my sons more than once down to the store with my debit card to use it, and nobody's ever said, you don't look like a 50-plus-year-old male. So photos were very different, but I think that perhaps the sponsors of this bill are onto something with the names. Our only concern at this point would be to work with the sponsor and DHS to see how these are going to be used and go through the payment system so that there isn't any glitch as they're used in grocery stores and other places. So we will continue to work with the sponsors and hopefully with DHS to try to flesh this out. But I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Okay. No further business before the committee today. Before I adjourn, I want to put on the record that Representative Post had to go home. He was sick today, but he was very supportive of House Bill 2644 and wish he was here to vote on it. So I told him I would put that on the record. No further business before the committee. We stand adjourned. No further business before the committee. We stand adjourned. On the record.